Okay, let's give a rousing welcome to our 10-minute speaker, affectionately named Marathon Mike, all the way from Bakersfield.
I'm alcoholic. Can everybody hear me? I don't talk with a microphone often. Thank you for asking me to be the 10-minute speaker. I am clearly uncomfortable, and that's probably a good thing. Probably be more honest that way. Yeah, I was talking to somebody last night about what I'm doing right now, and he said, as long as you have God on your back, you're all good. And that's kind of how I felt. I thought that I'd be, like, super nervous this entire week because I knew that this was coming. Like, I haven't been. I've been relaxed and calm, and I can do this as long as I've got God with me. We're all good. I was thinking I would just do what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I think the biggest part for what it was like, geographics are a big part of my story. I added up a little while ago that I moved 15 times in 5 years, and the last one was to Hawaii because I saw a show on TV and I'm like, wow, that looks beautiful, let's do that. And I sold all my stuff, and I bought a ticket and moved to Hawaii. I found some property that I was doing a research online and saw a property that was very, very cheap. And I said, okay, I'm going to go do some other stuff that I was doing at the time and grow a whole bunch of stuff that I was doing at the time there. That was the plan. I showed up and found out that it was a rainforest. That's why it was so cheap. So that kind of ended that plan. I was in Hawaii for about 16 months, I think, and I moved to Hawaii to get a different life, and I was thinking about it this last week that I sure as hell got it. Without going to Hawaii and going through all the stuff that I went through, I would not be where I am today. I would not be sober and content and at peace most of the time. That last month of my drinking, I do not want to ever forget. It was the worst month of my life. I will start by saying I was invited to a friend's house for Thanksgiving dinner because I was there by myself in Hawaii, and they knew that I didn't have any family there, and that was very kind of them. I went to their house. They asked me if I wanted beer because they knew I drank, and I said, oh, no, I don't need any beer. I just got drunk before I showed up. And they had beer there, so I continued to drink, and I made a complete ass of myself. I was the only one drinking. And I woke up the next morning, and I was already on a major downhill slide before then, but that just said, they gave me the efforts, and I took it to the extreme. That last month, I did not spend a second conscious sober. If I was awake, I was drinking. I spent the entire, I would wake up in the middle of the night drinking, or go drink to go back to sleep. That last month, I quit my job because I was just going to end it. I was just going to drink myself to death. That was the plan. I turned off my phone because it was Christmas time. My family started freaking out because they thought there was something wrong, and there was clearly something wrong. They sent a family member to find out what was going on. And she convinced me to get some help, and I did. Right about then, the obsession to drink left when she showed up. I knew that it was over. I knew that I needed to do something totally different, and I did. I moved back to the mainland, moved up to Washington, and my sister is sober. Today is actually her 15th sober birthday. I wish she was here. She's a very important part of my life. She showed me that she could get sober, and if she could get sober, I could too. And I knew where to go. I had tried this before, but I didn't really give it a solid shot. I just went to meetings occasionally. But I was done, and I knew I needed something different than what I had, and this was a glimmer of hope, and I took advantage. That first month, actually, I'm going to just skip back for a second. That couple of days when my mother was there checking on me in Hawaii, I was sick. I mean, physically sick. I should have been in the hospital. I was hallucinating. The bed was soaking wet when I would go to sleep at night. I was hallucinating throughout the night. I should have been in the hospital. I thought that they would just say you shouldn't drink anymore, so I didn't go. And I knew that I shouldn't, so I just said I don't need to go. But I got back to here, the mainland, and I went to meetings. I went to a place very much like the Alano Club for the first 30 days, a meeting pretty much every day. I was really sick, physically sick, for that month, and I might have missed a couple, but I came back down here, showed up at the Alano Club. I grew up in Porterville, so I know this area somewhat well. I showed up at the Alano Club, and somebody that was very important to me when I was 19 and realized that I had a problem helped me out. And he doesn't go to a lot of meetings, and I show up at the Alano Club. He's sitting right in front of me, and he pointed me in the direction of Sunday morning, Serenity Seekers, and I just started going to meetings. That's all I could do. Literally, that is all I could do. I was very sick, emotionally, physically, mentally, and that is what I did. I went to meetings. I remember I got my first 60-day chip. I didn't want to get a 30-day chip, and I didn't want to get a 24-hour chip because I didn't want anybody to know that I was new, but pretty sure they knew because I was sick as hell. And I remember Tommy gave me that chip. That was a big deal to me. Yeah. Yeah, it has been a very interesting ride. My sobriety date is 12/31/12. It's been a little over 3 years. I just got a job down in Bakersfield about 17 months ago. And yeah, I've continued to do this thing. I go to meetings on a regular basis. I am of service. I'm a secretary of a meeting. Yeah, this is the best thing that has ever happened to me by far. I am glad that I made the decision to do this. I remember the day I asked my sponsor to be my sponsor. The battle in my head was, am I going to do this? Am I not going to do this? Do I really want to do this? Am I going to do this? I know what's going to happen if I don't do this, but I don't know what's going to happen if I do this. And I'm glad that I chose to ask. Everything has changed since that day. He told me to read the first 64 pages and give him a call when I got done. I called him the next day and I said, what's next? I took this very seriously. I continue to take this very seriously. I don't think I was thinking about this morning. I don't think I have like a big rope. I don't have a lot of leeway. I need to stay very close to this thing. If I get too far away, it's going to be bad news. It's going to be that last month of my drinking again, and I'm moderately healthy, so it's going to last a long time, and I don't want that. What it's like now, I have a really good job. They are very pleased with me. life's pretty sweet today. I have a group of people that drove up here to see me do this, and I feel very connected to them. I feel very connected to the people here in Visalia and Tulare because this is where I got sober, and this is, they didn't get to see me like walk through that like first 2 months. Like they just saw like a bit of a polished product. Like I sometimes wish they could see the guy that came through the door. I don't want to forget that. I wish I had a picture of that guy. He's not anything like the guy up here right now. Within the last, like when I was hallucinating, the past couple of days after I stopped drinking, I was having trouble walking. I could not walk across the room without taking a breath or taking a break because I was so weak. And today I run for fun, and I run marathons, and I, from that guy to this guy, it is pretty hard to explain without a higher power guiding me to where I am today. I'm waiting to find out if I am accepted to graduate school. I'm applying to a couple different programs, and that does not happen unless I am sober, and it doesn't happen unless I'm doing this thing. I think that is about all I've got. I am very grateful to be here. I am very grateful to people in this room. They have helped me out more than I could possibly tell you. If you are new, I would just suggest going to a lot of meetings and hook up with these people. They're the most genuine, authentic people I've ever met. And they really will help you if you are willing to do the work. So thank you for letting me be here, and that is all I got.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, let's give a rousing welcome to our featured speaker, Oildale Mike.
My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. That's the most accurate and honest thing you're going to hear out of me tonight. My name and that I am an alcoholic. I want to thank Rick for asking me to do this. I want to thank Mike for coming up. And I know you guys couldn't tell, but it was his first time ever. So I thought he did a really good job. Just to kind of touch on the ism of my alcoholism, this is how this goes, is, this meeting's been going on for a long time. I've been living in Visalia for about 8 years, so it's real easy to get a little resentment as to why I haven't done this 6 or 7 years ago, And then the second I was asked to do it, it's like, no, I don't want to do that. That's it. As an alcoholic, I want all of the attention until the second the attention is shined on me. Then I don't want it anymore. I want to welcome the three young ladies that introduced as newcomers tonight. I would just encourage you to find women in this room or the next room to get close to. They will show you what to do. And if you're ready and you're willing, then you can have what we have here. So what I understand about this deal is I'm going to stand up here and say stuff for the next few hours. And you're going to kind of hear three things from me. You're going to hear some of my own experience. You're going to hear some of what I've learned from the literature in this program. And you're going to hear some things that I have heard from other people. Only they aren't going to get any credit for it because they're not here. So my sobriety date is December 13th, 1985. I never thought I had a problem. It was just plain and simple. I just didn't think I had a problem. But imagine, with that mindset, it was somewhere in the vicinity of December the 15th or 16th of 1985. I'm sitting in hospital scrubs on the fourth floor of St. Agnes Hospital in a brand new recovery facility, and I'm now in the lunchroom, and I'm all by myself, which was how I liked it. And in marches 20 or 30 of you who've been in this place a week or two or whatever, longer than I have, with this little instructor, this guy named Jeff. He was about this tall. He weighed about 100 pounds. And he walks in and writes on the board the last paragraph of the spiritual experience. Contempt prior to investigation. Very first thing I ever heard as it relates to Alcoholics Anonymous. A, I'm pissed off that they're interrupting my lunch. And B, how did he know? How did he know? But it just kind of went right through me. And day or two after, some other reading came along. Now I'm in street clothes and with you in this facility, still trying to figure out, am I going to be the best guy in here or the worst guy in here? I hadn't quite made up my mind yet. And I heard, whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. Reaction A, I'm pissed off. B, how did they know? You know, that one I didn't like for a long, long time. You know, the beginning, I need to say this for me, especially for people that are new. I am exactly like you. I drank and used for as long as I possibly could. If I could have done more, I would have. Turns out that wasn't the plan, and it took me years in this program to understand that it wasn't my plan anyway. And I have a that's, you know, when I'm sharing normally, that's kind of my drunkalogue. That's it. I mean, telling a bunch of drunks how to drink is like preaching to the choir. I have a good friend who argues with me, no, the newcomer needs to hear the details, so tonight I'll share some details, but the exactly like you is really important for me because that was who I was, and I know that that's who you were, at least I think so, that I had to be different. I was different in every way. If you only knew what I had been through, if you only knew what I had to deal with, there was always an excuse, a justification for my behavior. And most times you didn't even know about it. I was talking to myself. But other than that, you know, I was fine till I was in seventh grade. As far as I know, we lived in Livermore, California. My dad had left a few years earlier, and I'd already decided that I was pretty much on my own. I was okay with that. And living in Livermore at that time, at that age, was like being Fred Savage in the Wonder Years. Which is exactly what it was like. Get up in the morning during the summer, get on my bike, friend's house, baseball by the end of the day. The only deal was when the street lights go off, you needed to be in the house. I was okay with that. And then one day my stepdad walked in and said, we're moving. And he took us to a place called Devil's Den. Quite a change from Livermore. We live 40 miles from anything, and I went to this little school in Lost Hills, and I didn't want to be there. But since I've been the height that I am since I was in seventh grade, right now, this is I haven't grown any since seventh grade, and I just didn't know. I was in kind of bad shape for this move. My whole life, whatever kind of life you can have when you're that age, was behind me. And they walked me into this room, seventh and eighth grade are both in the same room, 16 kids total. And as the principal, Mr. Thomas, was introducing me, I don't know which one of them it was, but I heard one of the guys say, oh, he's on our team. And I thought, okay, they recognize. So I was kind of okay. But I was doing what I was doing in Livermore. I didn't give a crap about school. You know, my mom was at school every week. And the classic deal, Mike's not using his potential. Yeah, whatever. I started doing the exact same thing there. The difference was about, I don't know, week, 10 days in, Mr. Thomas calls me into his office right out the schoolroom, and he just said, look, I don't know what they did where you came from, but we don't do that crap here. You got about a day to get your mind right. And those may not have been exactly words, but I knew what he meant. So I did. And I went from a kid who was flunking out of school to never get anything less than an A for the next 2 years. And it was about the attention that I received. When I started high school, it was a big promise made to my parents, because we lived 40 miles out of town and I was going to live with my grandparents for the next couple of years. And I promised them one night, A, I'd never drink. B, if I did, I'd never get in the car with anybody. That's what they were concerned about. That was their concern. I promise you I won't do that. Freshman year, kept my promise. Kinda. Last day of school, two things happened. Well, there was an event. There was a last day of school dance. My girlfriend, who happened to be a junior, pretty good score for a freshman, broke up with me. And I'm standing at this dance, and two guys that I knew, because there's only 300 kids in the school, but never really hung around, walked over to me and said, hey, we have a six-pack of beer. Do you want to go? And I said, yeah. So I kept my promise to my parents until the first time I was asked if I wanted a drink. We got in the car and pulled out on Highway 33. I opened the beer. I took a drink and I didn't like it. I just didn't like the taste of it. And about 2 seconds later, these red lights came on behind us. And we're in trouble. Beer goes out the window. Highway patrolman pulls us over. He's got no evidence, or however that works. And we got away with it. That was a big part of the deal. Knowing that I had gotten over the line and back, no trouble. It's a big part of my story. You know, the tough thing about a deal like this is you think you know what you're going to say. Just not a clue. As hard as I try to not think about this all day long, you know. Anyway, those were kind of some of the fun. I'll just tell you what I always thought was a fun story. It was one of these stories where when you're a sophomore, junior in high school, you're kind of, in the school that we went to, you're kind of elevated a little bit. Six guys in a 1964 Impala leave this little town. We're all 15 to 16, 17-year-olds, six of us. We're going to the Paso Robles Fair, on to San Luis Obispo, because two girls that we went to high school with have an apartment over there for the summer. So we'll decide which two of us wind up with what two of them, but we're drinking the whole way. I don't know what time of night it was. We're leaving the Paso Robles Fair. We're at a stoplight. Light turns green. The car in front of us doesn't move. Honk. One little honk. And we take off. Everybody takes off. We're on the Cuesta Grade. All of a sudden, there's this car behind us with four guys in it honking their lights at us and pulling us over. My best friend sitting next to me would fight anybody, anywhere, almost any time if he's drunk. And he was. We could hardly contain him. And these guys, so we're going to San Luis Obispo. We take the very first off ramp. It's late. I'm guessing it's 1-2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm sitting in the back seat by the door. I open the door, turn around and look, and getting out of this car are four of the biggest men I've ever seen in my life. Now I have a different problem trying to get Gary back in the car so that we can leave. These guys chased us around San Luis Obispo for hours. Hours. At one point, we found this like 5-block park, and we just went around, kept going around. Round and around and around. from the country. Just so happened, we had a .22 rifle laying in the floor. So one of my other buddies on the other side just leans out of the car with that .22 rifle. It's not loaded. We know we gun safety. But we lost them, or so we thought. They pulled into a parking spot that I didn't even think was there. We made two or three turns, and now we're all out of the car in this residential neighborhood. Now we're having fun. You know, we got away from it. I mean, these guys were massive. Just, it's like, all of a sudden, a car comes screeching around the corner, and they found us. Now we're on foot, running, jumping through yards, people's fences. We're two blocks over, banging on somebody's door, begging them to call the police. So we don't. So the police come. These guys know the police. They're friends with them. Bottom line of that story was, we made it to the girl's house that night. We got away with whatever we were doing. Long way from that, and there were a lot of fun times. You guys from Tulare County don't know this, and I want to say one thing real quick too. I appreciate everybody coming up here for Bakersfield to support Mike. That's what they're going to tell you. The truth is, they came up there so they could stay sober. That's why they're here. My buddy Steve and I went to high school together. Found out he was living in Bakersfield. I called him up one night and pretended I was an IRS agent and that he had a problem with his taxes. And it was just fun listening to him panic on the phone and stutter and all that kind of stuff. The end of that story was he showed up at my apartment and we'd both gone out and bought a case of beer or whatever, however much it was, and we did what we knew how to do. We drank. You know, and it was fun. I was the guy that was never, ever, ever going to get married until I met a girl. And I was 19 and got married. I was never, ever, ever going to do drugs until the first time one of my friends said, "Look what I have." Apparently there's something wrong with my never. It just doesn't work right. That was all well and good. There was a lot of, just like everybody else, there was a lot of fun in being a kid. We had, being this guy that I had to push back in the car. We sat on in the town we grew up in, there were these, I call them row houses. They were like two-story duplexes. And a buddy of ours was dating this girl, and he had told us, so I'm taking her back to my place, if you want, I'll have her undress in front of the window. So we're on the roof of this duplex. We each have two quarts of beer waiting for him to come home. We miscalculated the people's house we were on. They came home first. Now the problem is, how do we get off this roof? That involved dropping the beer from the roof, jumping from the second story, and running. Now, at a town of 1,500 people at the time, it's really hard to be anonymous. But we got away with it. Fast forward some years. And my sobriety, I believe, looking back, began with a spiritual experience on December the 12th, 1982, 3 years before I took my last drink, almost to the day. You ever had to pee real bad? I'm driving from Taft to Bakersfield. I'm not going to make it. I am not going to make it. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I didn't pull my car off to the side of the road. I drove by 500 gas stations. Found myself at a good friend of mine's house who was a born-again Christian. Knocked on his door. As soon as he opened the door, didn't have to go to the bathroom anymore. Out of my mouth came, "I can't live the way I'm living. I need some help." And I went through that experience with him that night. Because there was no support that I was willing to take advantage of that lasted about 6 months. And at that point in time, I was absolutely certain that this didn't work. I don't know who or what you guys are talking about, and I'm glad it works for you, but it doesn't work for me. And I was off again. And I would drink and use and drink and use and drink and use. But I was always responsible. I had never been fired. I'd never been arrested. I always made good money. I never had a job that I wasn't promoted several times in that company. And it all was driven by the same insecurity. I'm either going to be the best at this or the worst at this. Well, what forced me to be the best was this responsibility that I took on of a wife and children, you know. Because my dad left, I wasn't doing that. No way I'm doing that. So I kept going, kept going. My last drunk went like this. On August the 31st of 1985, I was at my parents' house preparing to go to a party. And had a 5-year-old son, an 18-month-old son, and my wife at the time was pregnant with what turned out to be my daughter. I had just ironed a shirt, was walking through the house, and I said, "Where's Todd?" That's my youngest son. A couple more steps, and I see Todd face down in my parents' pool. From that day to this day, I still do not remember touching the ground before I hit the water. Because of what had happened to me, my experience with God, the second before I saw that, I would have argued with you, if nothing else, just for the sake of argument, that there was no God, that He would not work. And in that next second, I was begging, screaming. My parents told me later that people 3 blocks away could hear me screaming, "Don't take this child from me." She's 32 years old. It's a pain in my butt. But we kept him. He was helicoptered to Fresno. I went into Fresno that night. And something happened in that hospital that I knew the life that I was living was wrong. The alcohol, the drugs, the running around, the not coming home, all these, I knew it was wrong. And that was it. I was done. Absolutely done. Woke up the next morning, no desire, no craving, no thought, nothing to do with it. And I began being a dad. I began being a husband. Began being a better worker. That was the moment that I needed. 42 days later, my daughter was born, October the 11th, 1985. Went home from the hospital. My mom was there watching my 2 boys. And I said to her, I took a shower, and I said to her, "Watch the boys, I'll be back in a few minutes." I don't have a single conscious thought of anything, doing anything other than what I'd been doing for the last 42 days in my head. I drove 35 miles out into the country, committed a felony, stole ounces and ounces and ounces of cocaine from a guy that I knew had it, and I knew he was out of the country. I was drinking on the way out there, and that began my last drunk. And it lasted 63 days. Till December the 12th, 1985, I stood in front of St. Agnes Hospital, going to this thing. I don't know what it was. It was just this. I don't even remember what they called it. I don't know what they called it. A rehab center. I don't even know. I was just going into this thing because by that point, everybody that knew me said, "Get out."
wife, parents, brothers, sisters, friends, nothing more to do with you. My thought is, what is your problem? What is your problem? 2 days prior to that, I had gone to Fresno to interview these guys in this place to see if they were qualified to take care of me. And I drove home that night with their fancy brochure, sat on my couch, the sun went down, and something happened. I got scared. I didn't know that that's what it was. But something told me, if I don't leave right now, I'm never going. So that's what I did. I packed my stuff. One of my kids is sick. Everybody's crying. My parents are on the phone. And just it's just awful. But I leave anyway. So foggy you probably couldn't see Rick from the seat of the car. And I came to in some sleazebag hotel, motel, whatever it was, somewhere in Fresno. And I was out of drugs and out of money. I had some credit cards that still worked, and I knew I was going to this hospital, so I thought, I better go buy a couple of new shirts. I probably need to look pretty good while I'm in there. So I did that. I went shopping. And I pulled up to St. Agnes Hospital. I had my bag over my shoulder, and I stood in the entryway to that hospital at the time. I drank my last beer, and I licked clean two little containers that I kept full at all times. Walked through the door. No idea what was going to take place. No thought that they were going to say, you're done. You don't get to do this anymore. That's exactly what happened. They introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. They made me go up to strange men that I had never met and ask for their phone numbers. For some reason, I was willing to do that. I don't believe that I was in control of that situation. It was all good for 2 weeks. Turning point was Christmas Day, 1985. I still wasn't sure what I was doing, but what I was doing was being the best guy in there. Their homework was simple. Simple. And so, it's like question one, paragraph one, you know. I'm done in 2 minutes. There's guys walking around. They're going, where'd you find that? You know? So I had people coming to me wanting to know how to do the homework. Well, that's how it should be. I'm in charge of this. Christmas Day, I get a pass to go home, and I drive over to my parents' house. And Christmas was always a pretty big deal. And it was apparent the minute that I walked through the door that I was not welcome there. And I was fine with my parents not welcoming me, my brothers and sisters not welcoming me. Screw them. I don't care. I don't care. But my two boys were afraid of me. And I could see by looking at them that they didn't know who I was. So I left because I had to be back in time to go to a meeting, apparently. By the time I got back to Fresno, I was angrier than I'd ever been in my entire life. I told the little guy that brought the people in to go F yourself when he said, get on the bus, we're going to a meeting. And I said, it's Christmas. Yeah, we're still going. So I go to this meeting in Fresno, and there's a bunch of old-timers in there. They all had like 7, 8 years. They were voting to close their meeting. I didn't even know what that meant. The bottom line was, us rehab people weren't going to be welcome to be in that meeting. Last straw. I was done. Got up and walked out. Walking back to the hospital, get my car. I'm done with all of this. Little girl in this facility. Coincidentally, her name was Pat. Coincidentally, she was Native American. She stopped me at the corner and said, where are you going? I'm done. I'm leaving. I told her how pissed off I was. How this 19-year-old girl knew to say this to me is It's not as much of a mystery as it used to be, but she said, you could leave if you want to, or you could go back upstairs and tell those people what you really think of them. You know what? That sounds like a plan. It's Christmas. Let's do that. So I marched back upstairs. I'd been in enough meetings to know that when you finish sharing, if I jump in, it's my turn. And I get my turn. So this guy finishes sharing. And just to make a point to these people, I said, my name is Mike, and I'm an addict alcoholic. And I'm about to tell these people where they can shove their vote, their attitude, whatever it is they came there with. How dare you say we can't come in here anymore? And I said, I can't live like this anymore. I need some help. That's what came out of my mouth. And then everybody starts clapping. Yay! Then they called on the next guy. And I'm screwed because I don't know what just happened. I don't know who said the words that were said. I have no idea what just took place. But I was in, as it turns out. At that point, I was in. I was done. I was done in that second. I wanted no more of what I had. I never wanted to be a father. When I got married, I told my wife, I don't want children. She came from a family of 7 or 8 kids. That should have been a red flag, but I was drunk. I didn't want them. When my first son was born, I realized there might have been something a little bit more important in this world than me. And when my second son was born, and the things we went through with him, the fear in their eyes, I can still see it. So I was done. I graduate from this place with honors.
They gave me a coin. Two things happened in the last days that I was there. Everybody else that left got to leave on their own. One person, one graduation ceremony. My turn. Some woman who obviously didn't get even have a clue what was going on, they let her go 2 days early, and she's messing up my graduation ceremony. I was pissed about that, you know? But something far more significant happened. My roommate, Junior, decided he'd smoke a little bit of marijuana on one of his trips home. He got busted. He's out. Word passes through the deal. There's a new guy coming in. He's going to be my roommate. And he's gay. Well, I walk over to Angie, the nurse, and I say, hey, is there any way that this guy can be in somebody else's room? She goes, well, let me see. Well, Angie went and told Jeff, the little guy. I'm sitting on my bed. I thought the door was broken when he hit it. I thought it came off the hinges. And he said, who do you think you are? A, telling us who we can put in your room, and B, for the reasons that you are doing this. Well, I don't have any answers to that. You know, I just want what I want. Jeff's solution? This guy was already here. My deal was, I've not met him. I have no idea who he is. Here's your solution to this. You're going to go find this man, and you're going to tell him exactly what you just did. And you're going to ask him if he will forgive you. You know, the steps say 1, 2, 3. But we kind of jumped to 9, right there on the spot. That was difficult. But it taught me something about me. It exposed just how judgmental of a human being I was in every facet of my life. Most gracious thing I've ever been involved with was this guy just turned to me and said, hey, look, man, I understand. I just want to get sober. And for the last 2 weeks or whatever it was that I was there, we kind of got to know each other a little bit. He was a good guy, you know. And I'll tell you what. It's a big, big lesson for me. So I get to Oildale. I find a sponsor. He was weird. Just plain and simple. He thought differently than I thought.
Al was my sponsor for 23 years. When he passed away, I had 22 years of sobriety, somewhere right in there. And I was messing around with who's going to be my next sponsor. Leon fixed that for me. He said to me, "You're either in or you're out. I don't care how much time you have. You're screwing around with this. You're either in the program or you're out." And he said, "I'll be your sponsor till you find somebody else." Might have saved my life right there on the spot. And Leon remained my sponsor for a few years. Couple years ago, or 18 months ago, somewhere right in there, it became necessary for me to find somebody to work with here locally. And I asked Reyes if he would help me, and he graciously said yes. I didn't ever want anybody's help with anything, ever. My self-sufficiency is overwhelming at times. In my sobriety, I'm probably learning more now than I've ever learned. Here's from the stories I've told, I've often said this: the promise God doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. My whole life, it was there. You know, the first time I ever heard it was when I got here. But I can look back now and know that if it wasn't there, I'm not here today. I'm absolutely not standing here. So, somewhere in that same time period, I had what I think can be termed, and I'm 22, 23 years sober. I'm active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I always have been. But I was confusing activity with accomplishment. I thought being active was enough. When I was 5 or 6 years sober, I used to sit in meetings in Oildale and say, every day, I want a greater relationship with my higher power. Every day I'd say that. I didn't do a damn thing about it. I just said it. I just talk. You know? I had a spiritual experience when I was 18 years sober, which was God doing for me something that I found that I was going to need later. He touched me in such a way that I knew without any doubt whatsoever that I'm being taken care of. And I started telling that story in meetings. Up until then, I was the educational variety guy. You know, when that happened, it was different. It was just different. It was a different relationship. I could touch it. I could find it all of a sudden when I needed it. And a few years later, without even noticing, I kind of started being a little bit more self-sufficient. Just a little tiny bit, you know, one day. If you're sitting here with some time, I hope I'm talking to you. I think it's the reason that I'm here. The book says that it was written to help us find a God of our understanding. That's why they did it. I don't have any idea how many times I've read that book. It wasn't all that long ago that I really, really saw that. It also says that that same God will solve your problems. Not maybe, not some of them, not every once in a while, just will solve your problems. So somewhere, February 5th, 2015, the consequences for my actions in sobriety came home to me in a way that I never ever thought that they would. It shined a light on the greatest selfish, self-centered mistake I've ever made, and the consequences of that are still unresolved. Like Rick Evans always said, life is living with unresolved issues. The net result of that was I had two choices, in or out. It's just that simple. I can leave, and I know where that road goes, or I can stay. Well, I chose to stay. What's happened in the last 16 months has been this. Where I used to say I want a higher or a better relationship with God of my understanding, I've got it. And I'm working on it every single day without fail. Every single day. And it's changed for me to a large degree. Is I always thought, as it says, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Sought. Look up sought in the dictionary. It says, see, seek. Well, to me, the seeking is, well, it's out there somewhere. I have to go get it. Somehow I have to, you know, be good or do this or whatever it has to be, and I'll get it. In this last 16 months, my thinking has changed on that. And this is part of what I said earlier. This is my experience and my opinion. This may not exactly be written in the book. It has changed to this. It's here. I already have it. What I have to do is let it out. We hear all the time, we got to give it away to keep it. I don't have anything to give away. I'm not smarter than anybody in the room. I don't know any more about the book than anybody in the room. You know, I don't even like reading. But if I possess this, I can give that away. I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and it helped me. We always talk about God's will for us. And I used to say, great answer. I have no idea what God's will is for me, but I'm pretty sure I know what it isn't. That's a pretty good answer. But I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said they were talking about wanting to do something, and the fear got right here, and it stopped them from doing it. And it just dawned on me. That fear, my will. When I give into that fear and I don't let out what God wants me to let out, if it's a positive message, if it's something encouraging for somebody else, then I've decided to use my will in that instant, in that moment, instead of letting God's will come into play. Makes it easier. I heard once somewhere, what helped me make this transition was, we're not human beings trying to be spiritual. We're spiritual beings trying to be human. From that perspective, I can stand here and say that God, as I understand Him, is taking care of me. Regardless of what the final outcome of my current situation, the problem that I'm dealing with specifically is, it's all going to be okay. It's literally all going to be okay. And there's a reason for it. That's the main thing. So, my days are pretty typical right now as a result of being here for the length of time. Let me clarify one thing. I've been here for a little over 30 years. You don't got to wait as long as I did. You don't, really don't. You can start tomorrow or maybe tonight on the way home. What I love about this program is you get to start when you get to start. You know, what I take for granted sometimes is I don't recognize sometimes when I'm headed for the door. I don't realize when sometimes when I step over here and say, don't worry, I got this, that I'm actually heading for the door. I have nothing. I have nothing other than the life that I've been given as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship, the steps, the service work, everything that I've received that has come through this God that has been taking care of me since long before I ever knew it was taking place. So, I'm extremely grateful. I hated the people that said, I'm a grateful alcoholic when I got here. Because I had no concept of what that meant. And you really sounded like you meant it. And that's all I needed to not like you. That was all I needed. I have come to understand that... I'll go back to one thing that Al used to say to me all the time. I would run to him, you know, in a puddle and spill out whatever the problem was, and he'd go, right now, do you have everything you need? Well, whatever, Al, just hang on a second here. Let me explain. No, Mike, right now, this moment, do you have everything you need? Years for that to sink in. Literally years for that to sink in. It's an absolutely amazing way of life. Okay, I'm going to give somebody credit for something that I heard him say, even though I said I wasn't going to when I started this. One of the best days I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous was a day that Steve walked in. You know, we grew up together. We did a lot of things together. It's a small town. Two reasons why I loved it, because I kind of knew that he might need to be here. And the other reason I loved it was because he thought he got there first. What's happened in the last couple of decades plus is I've come to love Steve for exactly who he is. And one of the things that I'm sure he stole from somebody else was, this is absolutely the best life I've ever known. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be doing it. So thank you for my life. Thanks.